Hi, and welcome to Jolly's Fall 2016 podcast series. This is Nick Thompson, the co-principal editor of the Journal of Language and Literacy Education, a peer-reviewed, open-access journal housed in the Department of Language and Literacy Education at the University of Georgia. Today, I'll be speaking with Eliza Braden, an assistant professor of elementary education in the Instruction and Teacher Education Department, College of Education at the University of South Carolina, and her research partner, San Juana Rodriguez, an assistant professor of literacy and reading education in the Elementary and Early Childhood Department at Kennesaw State University. Their manuscript is titled Beyond Mirrors and Windows, A Critical Content Analysis of Latino Children's Book. Thank you, Eliza, and thank you, San Juana, for joining me today. I look forward to hearing so much more about your work. Let's start with you, Eliza. You make a powerful assertion in your manuscript that, and I quote, children's literature must give children pathways to interrogate and contest the ways in which cultural groups are presented within stories. My career is primarily focused on high school age children, and I've often gotten criticism from parents and administrators for planning units around the interrogation and the contestation of dominant narratives in our society. The books you analyze are aimed at an even younger population. How do you answer critics who think these topics are too mature for children?
Well, Nick, we believe that children's literature has the potential to be a vehicle for children to begin to interrogate how groups are represented, and we see books as educational tools. There are those who believe that young students cannot and should not take up these topics. However, as current research indicates, children are both knowledgeable and aware of complex issues taking place in society. Our assertion only lends itself to the collective studies and findings that find that children hold a wealth of knowledge around politicized topics. These are often the taboo topics that adults deem unfitting to be included in curriculum. However, children are consequently discussing in their homes, communities, and outside classroom walls, such as topics around immigration, gender-neutral facilities, race and ethnicity relations, and et cetera. They can all be taboo for teachers and schools who are not accustomed of this work. A prime example would be the election debate. The rhetoric and corrosive climate of the presidential election has been a topic of many households. And if young children see this in the media, how does this play out in the ways they treat others at school? This is why it is imperative that spaces are created for young children to interrogate these topics. How can we expect them to respectfully engage in healthy relationships with people from diverse backgrounds if we do not disrupt traditional practices of schooling?
Thank you. Sanwana, your critical content analysis examined the representation of Latinx in 15 picture books and revealed four major insights. The first is that English is privileged, even in books that boast significant Latinx content. What does a children's book that does not privilege English look like, and are they consumable by monolingual children, and does that even matter?
When we think about diversity, we're often drawn to think about race or class, but we also have to consider language diversity and think about it as being important. We believe that children's literature should reflect the society in which it's produced. And overall, children's literature that's being published in the U.S. does not authentically reflect multilingualism. In fact, most of the books that we analyzed for our study were written solely in English, and those that were bilingual privileged English in different ways. So for the most part, we saw English, the English language, more featured more prominently in the text. And this is actually a surprising finding, considering that we were analyzing books that had significant Latino content. We had expected to see more language diversity within these texts. I think we have to consider that multilingual children are currently interacting with picture books that don't acknowledge or celebrate their language diversity. We think that a book that does not privilege the English language is actually one that is multilingual. We believe that some of the bilingual books that we analyzed for our study help all children know that language diversity should be acknowledged and celebrated. And we know that this can be difficult because we live in the U.S. and we know that English is privileged in the curriculum and that monolingualism is, for the most part, the norm. But the data shows that the number of multilingual students is actually growing. And if we look at the U.S. Census Bureau, a report that came out states that 21% of Americans reported speaking a language other than English in their home. This was in 2015. And so we believe that this multilingualism has to actually be reflected in the text that children read.
I couldn't agree more. Eliza, most of your manuscript is dedicated to a cultural and ethnic lens analysis of these books, but you shift to discuss gender roles in your third major insight. Why is it important to consider the intersectionality of race and gender when looking at the representation of Latinx people in children's or any literature for that matter?
I'm not sure it is wise to critically analyze the representation of Latino people without looking at the intersections of gender. By looking at the intersectionality of both identity factors, we can see the multiple hegemonies that are in place. This leads us to wonder what messages get coded and recoded for young children when they see the ama de la casa role, for example, taken up by working Latina women. So if texts are not interrogated for such intersections, I have to wonder if we are perpetuating the messages we are actually trying to disrupt in our classroom libraries.
Thank you. Lastly, Sinwana, in the section of your piece about what it means for teachers, you write, and I'll quote you again, "We also argue that going beyond windows and mirrors means recognizing that culture is not static and that no ethnic group is monolithic in nature. What advice can you give to teachers for building their classroom library about how to be sensitive to the dynamic nature of cultural representation, particularly when teachers are selecting books of cultures to which they do not exactly belong?"
First of all, we hope that teachers understand how important it is to build a classroom library that reflects different experiences. It's important for students to see their experience as well as the experiences of others reflected in the literature that's shared in classrooms. And as stated in the article and much of the work around diverse literature, there's a growing need for more children's books that actually do this. We also realize that it's simply not enough to have classroom libraries filled with books that feature people of color. So we believe that teachers also have to be critical in examining the cultural representations in these books. We think that in selecting these books, teachers have to look for texts that portray the complex nature of culture beyond that tourist approach. And the great thing about this is that there are so many resources that can help teachers make these decisions. The Children's Book Award list are a great place to start. Awards such as the Coretta Scott King Award and the Pura Belfra Award are a great place to start to look for texts that portray different cultures in authentic ways.
Well, thank you, Eliza and Sinwana, so much for speaking to me today. Listeners, to learn more about their work, check out Jolly's fall issue to be published in November.